Hello again, everyone. I'm Brian Deanovellis, and I'm back with another Tri-State College Basketball podcast as we get you ready for the start of the 25-26 college basketball season. Coming up on this episode, it's our annual MAC preview with Mr. MAC, Jaden Daly of Daily Dose of Hoops. We'll talk about all of our Tri-State teams, Iona, Sacred Heart, Manhattan, Fairfield, St. Peter's, Rider, and of course, Quinnipiac, the preseason number one team in the MAC with the best player in the MAC, the reigning MAC player of the year, Amari Monroe. I'm sure you know his story well. If you don't, he turned down big bucks in the NIL market. UConn was after him. Rutgers thought they had him signed, sealed, and delivered, but instead he decided to stay at Quinnipiac as he tries to lead the Bobcats to their first ever MAC tournament championship. So we can't wait to talk to Jaden. We'll get to all of that and my interview with Jaden, but first, let me thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy or sell a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth or Ocean Counties, get in touch with Mike. Give him a call at 201-988-2577 and tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, here we go. Welcome back to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. The man who's forgotten more about the MAC Conference than I'll ever know. The Dean of the MAC, my friend Jaden Daly of Daily Dose of Hoops, your nonstop source for all things college basketball. What is up, Jaden?
Brian, it's been a long time, my friend. Maybe a little too long, but the fact that I get to come on with you means we're getting close to the season. We're actually hours away as we record from the official start of the 25-26 campaign. No better time of the year, and I'm thrilled to be here and spending a few minutes with you.
Yeah, thrilled to talk to you as well, Jaden, and this is perfect timing to talk about the MAC. But obviously, listen, your blog spot does more than that, and we'll get into that because you know, you and I will be at Rutgers Rider on Wednesday, and I know you're going to St. John's as they raise the banner against Quinnipiac. You know, a couple of years ago when we talked, you were over 100 games, Jaden. I know you know the number. Your last 2 years, give the viewers the amount of games that you go to in the Tri-State area.
Yeah, 2 years ago was 110. So you were pretty accurate on that one. Last year, I cut back a little bit to 78. I have over 100 scheduled right now. We'll see if that holds up come April. By the time I get to Indianapolis in the Final Four, but we'll see where it goes. It should be an interesting year. I have probably one or two more like this left in me before I start to permanently cut back and do a lot more ancillary coverage outside of being live and traveling all over. So Metro North, LIRR, New Jersey Transit, and the MTA can all breathe a sigh of relief. In another couple of years,
they come to you for the schedules. So, hey, you went down to Atlantic City for the MAC Media Day, September 30th. That's how far you travel. What was that like? And what was your reaction coming out of that?
I've gone further than that, but I was one of the few media members there in person. So I was able to get access to just about everybody. You didn't get everybody, but all. Got a good amount of MAC coaches on the men's and women's side. And the overall consensus, Brian, is that this league is probably a little more wide open than it's been in recent years, which is a bold statement considering how the MAC has usually played out. And, you know, from spending enough time around it the last few years as well, you have any one of about four or five teams that I think could realistically be the regular season champion and ultimately the tournament champion. There's not a clear-cut favorite like there was the past couple of years. Quinnipiac was voted the consensus number one with Amari Monroe returning for Tom Pecora. But you look at some other teams right behind them. You look at Sacred Heart, who has a senior-laden lineup with Anthony Latina and just their second year in the league coming over from the NEC. You look at Siena, turning the corner under Jerry McNamara and bringing back a veteran core with Justice Schoetz and Gavin Doty, and we'll get into the Saints a little more as well. You look at Iona with a new head coach in Dan Giroux, who I'm sure you remember from when he played at Richmond not that long ago. He makes me feel old. knowing that he's the head coach at Iona now, but
right.
he's got an interesting approach from his background as an assistant in the NBA, working with the likes of LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and Zion Williamson, among others, over the last decade and a half since he graduated.
Who
and
were all, by the way, I'm going to cut you off, who were all very, boy, did they come out on Twitter endorsing him when he got the hire, huh?
They did, yeah.
You know, which says a lot. Which says a lot about his pedigree and what they think about him as a coach and an instructor. So that's very good for him.
Right, and then you also have Manhattan, 15 minutes away from Iona, with a veteran core coming back as well. Maybe a little bit of a roadblock to start the year after the ruling came down that Will Sidnor is ineligible at the moment. That came down just a day or two ago from Manhattan.
Let's start there, and then we'll go back to Quinnipiac. You know, you mentioned this, and you're talking about one of the stars in the MAC Rookie of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Probably could have gone out on, you know, NIL market and gotten money. You talk about a blow to Manhattan right now, and what is going on there? What can you tell us?
The statement that was released Friday afternoon says, word for word here, Will Sidnor is currently dealing with an NCAA eligibility matter unrelated to any malfeasance on his part. The university and Will have been working directly with the NCAA toward a swift and fair resolution of Will's situation, which we anticipate will be concluded in the coming weeks. In light of this issue, he will not be participating in athletic competition at this time. Will is receiving his full scholarship and is permitted to practice and travel with the team. Manhattan University will not be commenting any further on this matter to protect Will's privacy.
I mean, it's guesswork. What could it possibly be?
Oh, we're not sure. Nothing has come out one way or the other. We just know that he's presently ineligible and the situation's being monitored and worked on, but while he's out, yeah, the timing is not ideal. And for Manhattan, this is not the first time the Jaspers have had adversity confront them right before the season started. You forget a couple of years ago with the situation involving Steve Masiello losing his job right before mm-hmm. the season started, and then Jose Perez, who was the preseason player of the year in the MAC that year, going right into the transfer portal after Masiello was let go. So it's not unfamiliar territory for Manhattan, but the Jaspers do have pieces to make it work. However long Sidnor is out, Jaden Winston is back, Devin Dinkins is back. You look at a guy like a Frazier Roxborough, who was a wing off the bench last year, who will be pressed into a bigger role, the 6'7 Australian forward, who will probably be counted on a little more to carry the offense. You look at some of the Division II transfers and JUCO transfers that John Gallagher brought in, like Anthony Isaac, who came from the same junior college as Swish Gilliard last year, and then Eric Oliver Bush, who played for St. Anselm in Division II and was an integral part of their rotation a year ago. Manhattan's cupboard is not bare, like some suggested it may have been a couple of years ago. This is going to be a little bit of a roadblock, a little bit of an obstacle, but it's not like this is going to be a season killer before the season even starts.
Sure. Well, listen, you hope that somehow they get this resolved in a month, right? When they open MAC play against Fairfield at home, that would be nice. But, you know, there are some winnable games there. You got St. Joe's in Brooklyn. They should be able to win without them. And then, you know, they go out west. They're going to Hawaii before that. You know, they play at USC, and then they're out in Hawaii for two games. Mississippi Valley State out there as well. You know, they probably get a nice paycheck when they go to Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
Not winning that game with him anyway. But, you know, and then they host Wagner and Army. So, you know, you hope with or without him, they there's three or four games in that schedule that you know, at least three, you say they might be able to win. Worst, you know, best case there, right?
Yeah, they'll be all right. They have a favorable schedule. It's not like they're a MEAC or a SWAC school playing seven or eight bye games against yeah. P5 schools.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The Jaspers will be okay in that instance.
Okay. So, wow. Let's head up to the top of the conference. Amari Monroe announces over the summer, and probably stunned everyone, maybe even his head coach, Tom Pokora, maybe surprised him a little bit by staying, because he was a coveted player out there on the market, could have commanded hundreds of thousands of dollars, and he bucked the trend, Jaden. He stayed home to finish some business at Quinnipiac, which in this day of show me the money is a little unheard of.
It's very unheard of in light of what the landscape's become, Brian. And I was able to write a piece on that at the beginning of October when Tom Pecora told me that Steve Peichel met with Monroe in Pecora's office on the Quinnipiac campus. Monroe was 95% delivered to Rutgers. He was being looked at by Kansas. He was being looked at by UConn. And it looked like he was on his way to Piscataway.
Wait,
and he had a change of heart.
Steve Peichel met Amari Monroe in Tom Pecora's office.
Yes.
That's what this is about. Imagine, I don't know, you know, Mike Krzyzewski going into Jim Calhoun's office, right? I mean, come on. But that's Tom Pecora saying, hey, you know, we want what's best for you, Amari, and not trying to stand in his way, I guess. There, it's still a little bit strange to me, though.
Exactly. And Pecora was up front with Monroe through the whole process and said that he wanted what was best for him. And then they were able to put together enough of a package to entice him to come back. He had the change of heart. Obviously, winning two regular season championships and coming up short in the MAC tournament semifinals each of the past 2 years weighed heavily into the decision as well. You look at what the Bobcats bring back. Jaden Zimmerman, the talented freshman last year, who was an all-rookie selection, is back as well. Grant Randall is going to take the next step. You look at a kid like Braylon Riffo, the Stepanak recruit who redshirted last year and should be a big part of the offense now this time around. With Paul Otieno gone, with Alexis Reyes gone, Quinnipiac has pieces. And when you keep someone like Monroe, who was motivated by the opportunity to win player of the year again, and that's something that hasn't been done in the conference since Justin Robinson repeated for Monmouth in 2016 and 2017.
Yeah.
So we're talking 8, 9 years now, and something that hasn't been done at the school level for Quinnipiac since joining the MAC. That was a chip on his shoulder that compelled him to come back to Hampden.
How different Rutgers roster would have looked, you know, 95% done. He was going to Rutgers. I'm sure Steve Peichel, you know, wasn't thrilled about it and had to move on, but that would have been a nice chip for him to have.
It would have been. And you look at lineup that Rutgers has, and you look at a Darren Buchanan, who Peichel got from George Washington, he and Monroe in the front court with Emmanuel Abole would have made the Scarlet Knights a little more formidable. They're going to have a rough go of it in the Big Ten, I think, this season. But having a guy like Monroe would have made things a little easier.
No doubt. No doubt. We're not making him out to be one of the top 10 transfers. But still, you know, when UConn is involved there, you know, it's a pretty good recruit. So that just tells you, you know, for those of you who don't know much about Amari Monroe, how you know, dominant he was in the MAC and how his game really could have transferred, you know, into the Big Ten or the Big East. But good for Quinnipiac, great for Quinnipiac, great for Tom Pecora. We'll see if they can repeat, three-peat as regular season champs. So let's go to the second place team here. Preseason number two, Siena. Really, you know, came out of nowhere from the depths of the MAC over the last year or so. Boy, what a job by Jerry McNamara in just 1 year. For those of you who know the name Syracuse, we knew him as a player. What a gutsy, you know, shot maker he was. And now we see he can coach too, Jaden.
Yeah, Siena did a good job coming back from last season from a 4-28 mark 2 years ago that ultimately cost Carmen Massarello his job, and maybe a year too early. I still feel he deserved another year, but you look at what Jerry Mack has been able to do at Siena. He's been able to get the Saints right back to where a lot of fans up there and a lot of people connected to the program feel that the program belongs consistently. When you look at what Siena has coming back with a point guard like Justice Schultz, a Division II transfer who also stayed, could have gone in the portal, but decided to stay in the Capital Region. You look at him, you look at a Brendan Coyle, who was a walk-on under Carm before taking on a scholarship and getting a greater role in the offense under Jerry, the two of them. And then you have Marcus Jackson, Andre's younger brother, back as well for Siena. Gavin Doty had a phenomenal rookie year a year ago. He should be a first-team All-League player as a sophomore. Siena has some intriguing transfers that I'd like to watch eventually during the season. I won't get them until after the new year. So by the time I get them, the non-conference season will have already come and gone. But I think Siena is well-positioned to make noise and really prove that 4-28 was just an aberration.
Yeah, listen, they've won, I think, five or six MAC championships throughout the years, a proud program. They haven't won one since 2010 or so, I think.
They haven't gone to the tournament since 2010. They won the regular season in 20 and 21, the two COVID years.
Yeah, so, right, okay. But you know, winning and going to the NCAA tournament, you know, it's been a while since they've tasted that. So the hunger is there. They have a gutsy coach in place, the players in place. We'll see. Right behind them, a team that some people feel might be the second best team in the MAC is Sacred Heart. No one has more players on the MAC preseason team. Three players: Anquan Hill, who was a stud; Makai Connor, who had an outstanding freshman season out of Notre Dame of West Haven, one of the best programs in the state of Connecticut, and another rising soft in Niall Ralph Byer. So you're talking about, you know, two freshmen who had outstanding freshman years last year. They're now sophomores who probably could have gone elsewhere. Anquan Hill, certainly. Anthony Latina made it his mission to retain all three. Check, check, check. Mission accomplished there. And Sacred Heart is right in the middle of it again.
Yeah, this is a team, Brian, that was picked last of 13 in the MAC last year, coming over from the NEC. So what a difference a year and a half has made for Anthony Latina, who was able to keep his freshman duo of Makai Connor and Niall Ralph Byer, who, as you mentioned, were such a dynamic backcourt for the Pioneers a year ago. Connor, an all-rookie selection as a freshman, and an excellent pure point guard. You look at the history at the point guard position that this program has turned out.
Yeah.
Kane Broom, who transferred up to Cincinnati, Quincy McKnight, who transferred up to Seton Hall. Before that, even you go back to Phil Gaetano, who ran the point in the early 2010s before going on to a successful career as an assistant coach. Connor is right there with them. And Niall Ralph Byer came on as a late bloomer last year as a freshman. With a full season under his belt, he'll be much more consistent and could be a first or a second team All-League player. You have a veteran in Anquan Hill who knows the lay of the land from his time at FDU and St. Bonaventure before coming to Sacred Heart. And Latina has two transfers that he was really high on. One is Deshaun Gittins, whose older brother Dante is on the coaching staff. So that was a good get for Sacred Heart, a local kid from the Hartford suburbs who is playing close to home for his last year. And then you look at a Jan Farrell, who played at St. Bonaventure in East Carolina, and he fits that role of a perimeter wing who can shoot on either side of the arc and provide offense when needed, but he's not going to be pressured into being the leading scorer when you have all those other pieces around him. It's a perfect fit.
And see, that's the type of player that Anthony Latina would not have gotten if they were still in the Northeast Conference.
Right.
You know, it's a step up in recruiting, and these players know that. You know, if they're coming from the A-10 or whatever conference they're coming from, the AAC or whatever, you know, if they're transferring down, they're doing it for more playing time, but they don't want to give up, you know, good competition. No doubt there. So, listen, there's not a whole lot of NIL dollars with some of these teams in the MAC. You know, certainly, you know, Canisius, Niagara, St. Peter's, Ryder, probably at the bottom. But the teams that spend money, money talks. You know, you're talking about Iona with deep pockets. You're talking about, you know, Manhattan. You're talking about Siena, Sacred Heart upped its game. You have to have a little bit of money and fundraising and support to be able to have a good program in this day and age. It's no different in this conference, Jaden.
Oh, absolutely. that's the nature of the beast now wherever you go. And even Fairfield has a good endowment and some good NIL packages as well. So it's become an arms race even at the mid-major level, and that's what it's going to be moving forward.
Yeah, so you mentioned Fairfield. Chris Casey, you know, a couple of years ago had a really good chance, had a great team. And then last year they fell off a little bit. This year I think they're predicted eighth in the conference. So, but more concerning, if you're a Fairfield Stag fan, Jaden, they have owned Fairfield County forever, right? Sacred Heart was the little sister there. It was the Yankees compared to the Mets. But, you know, just like some years the Mets overcome the Yankees, Sacred Heart is now the big dog in Fairfield County. And Fairfield is trying to, you know, get to where Sacred Heart is. Interesting.
Yeah, and the problem for Chris Casey last season was he got younger when the rest of the league got older. When you talk about the team that almost won the MAC tournament 2 years ago behind the four senior guards, Caleb Fields, Bryson Goodine, Jasper Floyd, that team that put a scare into St. Peter's in the MAC championship game but ultimately came up a little short. He had a hard time replacing that experience last year. He's a little better off this season with Braden Sparks coming back, with Deuce Turner coming in as well. But I still think Fairfield's a year away from really making noise again and being a contender. They have a very promising young group coming in as well, but they're going to have to grow up real fast come league play to escape the middle to bottom tier and challenge for a top five or six position in a first round bye in Atlantic City.
Okay, fair enough. Iona, here is a program that, you know, they are the standard, right? And the standard is winning championships and going to the NCAA tournament. And if they're not getting there, they will show you that you're not going to be long there as their head coach. So they make the switch. Dangerio comes in. What are your impressions so far of their new coach and an entirely new roster?
Well, I got to see Iona in a practice not too long ago. I'm a little more secure on the Gales this season than I was before Dangerio put the roster together. I like what their backcourt could be when you look at a Keyshawn Williams who comes in from Colorado State and a Denver Anglin who played on the Georgetown team that won the Big East a couple years ago. He's got one more year left that he chose to spend in New Rochelle. But the key for Iona, and you're going to hear his name early and often, is Lamin Sabali. He's a senior forward, 6'8", about 215, 220, a prototypical five-man in the MAC, who can play inside and outside. And if the last name sounds familiar, it's because he's got basketball lineage. His two older sisters, Satu and Niara, are playing in the WNBA. Satu Sabali played at Oregon alongside Sabrina Ionescu. So yeah, basketball runs in the family, and he may not be as good as his sisters right now, but he's going to be a very good big man in the MAC.
So and you need big men in the MAC, right? It's not a league where, you know, it's not the Big Ten, but if you have a skilled big man, it can make a big difference.
No doubt, it's a guard oriented league, but having a productive big man will always help.
So I believe Iona's picked fifth in the preseason poll, fifth or sixth.
Sixth, Marist was fifth.
Fair for them?
Yeah, I think maybe Iona's past reputation gave them a little bit of a boost. I probably would have had them a little lower, like seven or eight. But to be sixth in that league, I think that's a fair barometer, maybe a little higher than I'd have had them, but nothing too egregious.
Okay. All right. Two more teams from the tri-state I want to get to, and they just happen to be 10th and 11th. And Ryder, Kevin Baggett, in his 14th season, he's been with the program for 20 years. You talk about job security there, but, you know, there's been a lot of talent in Ryder. Their talent is down this year. They still have an excellent guard in Zion Cruz. What do you think of the Bronx this year and what Kevin Baggett needs to do?
You talked about Zion Cruz. I'm also going to talk about Flash Burton, the Philadelphia point guard, who had a very good freshman season a year ago, and he's back as well. I think the two of them are going to be the biggest keys for Baggett. There's been a little bit of a hot seat surrounding him and his job security. He's in the last year of his contract going into this season. Mm-hmm. We don't know what Ryder's going to do at the end of the year, if they'll extend him, if they won't renew. We'll leave that for later on. We'll focus on what Ryder needs to do in the present. Get back to where they've been on defense the last few years. When you look at points per possession, Ryder is always at or near the top of the leaderboard in fewest points per possession allowed. If they can control the tempo defensively and limit the opposition, they'll be just as good as anyone.
Hey, defense travels, right? And maybe nobody does it better in the league year in and year out than St. Peter's, right? So not much is expected of the Peacocks. You can never count them out because of the way they play defense. And you know, I really like Bryce Eaton. He's a fun player to watch.
He really is. I was very impressed with him the one time I saw St. Peter's last year, which was early in the year against Rutgers. And Bryce Eaton did an excellent job on Dylan Harper for about 35 minutes before Dylan took over down the stretch after the last time out. And you're talking about a player who was just drafted second overall in the NBA a few months ago.
And who's putting up big numbers in his first couple of weeks in the NBA, too. You know, double digits in points. I just looked at his stats. You know, he's up there in rebounds and assists. You know, he's been worthy of their number two pick. And that's a pretty good, you know, measuring stick when you're holding your own against a player like that.
Absolutely.
So, Jaden, excellent job. You know, you're throwing out names from 15, 20 years ago. I always laugh at your memory. It's an encyclopedia, even in the MAC. It's not like we're talking about the Big East or the Big Ten or the ACC. So kudos to you. Let's go, you know, around the conference in terms of what your predictions are. Who wins the regular season?
Okay, gun to my head here, and this is going to be really off the cuff here. I like Sacred Heart. I really do. I like what that roster and that continuity is. And
wow,
that team, that program made more strides last season than I would have expected. Didn't lose too much outside of Tanner Thomas and Amiri Stewart, who transferred elsewhere during the offseason, but the progression of Mekhi Connor, if Anquan Hill can stay healthy, he's probably the best big in the league. Nile Ralph Byer could be the knockdown shooter that this program needs. And Sacred Heart's been close before when it was in the NEC and came up just short in the conference championship games and conference tournaments a few years ago. I think at the end of the day, they'll be the one seed going into Atlantic City.
Wow. And you know, you hit on it too, because the injury bug they've suffered from the injury bug the last few years. And there's no doubt about it. I think you could put an asterisk here and say the team that remains the healthiest has a great shot at winning the regular season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you can navigate the minefield without blowing a part of you off, I think you're in better shape than anybody else.
Yeah, and look, I know they like having their conference tournament in, you know, in a neutral site, and they love Boardwalk Hall and, you know, what Atlantic City brings. But boy, I would love it if this conference somehow went back to a championship game at home court, because it's so unpredictable. You know, 1 through 8, anyone can win the conference tournament. We saw what happened last year with Mount St. Mary's. I don't think anyone had them on their bingo card. Do you see any? Go ahead.
No, nobody did. But when you look at the way this league is set up, it's not crazy to see a Marist or a Merrimack or even an Iona, if they come together ahead of schedule, to really make a run going into the end of the year. Mac's never had a home court conference championship game. They've usually in the early years did preliminary rounds on campus sites before doing the final at the Meadowlands. This is back before I even knew what the MAC was, in the 80s and early 90s. I was born in 1986, so right in the middle of it. But
I was a sophomore in high school, so
I remember talking to Tom Moore when he was still the head coach at Quinnipiac, and he was the biggest proponent in the league of having true campus sites for the tournament. But Rich Enzer, who was the commissioner at the time, who retired just a couple of years ago, wanted the neutral site. Tom Moore had a very valid and compelling argument, because a lot of these schools, Brian, don't always get to experience March Madness every year. You want to have something tangible, something memorable for the students, for the staff, for the administration on campus to get to experience that, to have a taste of it. So it was a valid argument. I don't know if the MAC will ever do it, but it's a valid and compelling argument where sometimes it gets lost in translation.
You know, I'm so old. You're right. I'm so old that you know, in 1988, my senior year, okay, in the MAC, we used to play Fairfield Prep, my high school, South Catholic High School. We played at Fairfield Prep, and the banners, I still remember the banners up there. You know, LaSalle, Army was in there. You know,
Fordham, in addition Holy to, Cross.
Yes, these were MAC teams. Lionel Simmons, Doug Overton were playing at LaSalle. I mean,
Tim Legler.
Tim Legler. Oh my God! You talk about a team that LaSalle had. I think Simmons had like 3,000 career points, at least 2,000.
He was a 3,000 point scorer. Yeah,
amazing. You weren't even born. You were 2 years old, and you remember he was a 3,000 point scorer. That's what I love about you, Jaden.
I remember when he played for the Sacramento Kings his early years in the NBA.
Okay, sure. I mean, that LaSalle team was just absolutely loaded. Long time ago, but still good times. All right, so you mentioned a couple of teams there. You mentioned Marist, Iona, maybe can crack the top four in your mind?
Yeah, even a Merrimack with okay. Joey Gallo in the 2-3 zone that always catches a lot of teams off guard.
Okay, sure. So, you know, a surprise team there. All right, last question. If Amari Monroe is the best player in the MAC, give me the second and third best players.
Okay. Second best right now, I would probably say, is Justice Schultz at Siena. I really like his game, a throwback scoring, passing MAC point guard who will beat you off the dribble with his quickness and really make things happen to get guys involved. So he's definitely going to be up there. If Will Sidnor is able to play the whole conference season, he'll probably get my nod for number three. But if not, I do like his teammate, Jaden Winston, point guard out of DeMatha, who doesn't get the credit that I think he deserves. He's done a lot more behind the scenes. I think he'll take the next step as a junior.
Okay, Jaden, awesome stuff as always. I'm so much smarter about the MAC when I talk to you, and it's always great having you on the show.
Ryan, it's always a pleasure, my friend. It's the least I could do for you. We'll catch up during the year, starting this Wednesday when Rutgers hosts Rider. We get to take a look at one of those MAC teams we talked about and how bright their future may be.
Can't wait. Looking forward to seeing you at Jersey Mike's Arena. All right, Jaden, talk to you soon.
Thank you, Brian. You too.
All right, that was Jaden Daly of A Daily Dose of Hoops Blogspot. Check him out. Give him a follow on Twitter. Telling you, nobody knows more about the MAC than Jaden Daly. Many times when he's the only man in those press conferences, and he gets around and he sees teams. You know, he's expanded his coverage with, you know, certainly UConn and going to Final Fours and national championships, and does a lot of Rutgers and Seton Hall and St. John's games in this area. But he does not forget his roots, and he is right there amongst great, great MAC reporters. So thank you, Jaden. Check him out. Give him a follow on Twitter and check out his blog spot. And that will do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Check out my sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, give him a call at 201-988-2577. Tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. The games are here, albeit Seton Hall, St. Peter's, opening night, Rutgers Rider on Wednesday, and the big one to end the week, St. John's hosting Alabama at the Garden. I'll have a podcast for you very soon, right here on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. First time I've said this in months. Enjoy the games, everyone. Until next time, my name is Brian Dean of Ellis. So long.